A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
An Erios original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we're speaking with guest expert John Ziemek. John is an associate professor emeritus at Northwestern University. He has worked in several departments of the Chicago Sun-Times. With Caroline Hopkins, a survivor of the Tenerife disaster, he co-wrote the book Collision on Tenerife, The How and Why of the World's Worst Aviation Disaster. Let's hear what he has to say about the Tenerife airport disaster. Hi, John. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You are welcome. It's good to be with you.
So you co-wrote your book with a survivor of the Tenerife airport disaster. How did you get involved in the project?
Yeah, I'd been a newspaper reporter in Chicago for a number of years, and I was looking for a larger project. And somewhat coincidentally, I met Warren and Caroline Hopkins, who live not too far away from me, through a mutual acquaintance. And Caroline in particular was looking for someone to help with the project of putting together her and her husband's experiences in this terrible disaster into a book. So and I'm interested in aviation. I was raised in an Air Force family. My father was a pilot during World War II. So there was a meshing of interests. I like to write. I understand aviation. And they were looking for someone like me.
Yeah. So Can you walk us through the events that happened on March 27, 1977, before the flights got diverted from Gran Canaria to Los Rodeos Airport in Tenerife?
Before they got diverted? Well, yeah, both of the flights, the KLM plane was coming from Amsterdam, the American plane, the Pan Am plane, was coming from North America. It started in Los Angeles and then stopped in New York, picking up people along the way. the Pan Am plane was taking people, was taking people to a cruise ship waiting for them on Grand Canary Island. And the KLM plane was simply taking a plane load of people to Grand Canary Island for vacations. They both, neither plane had intended to wind up on Tenerife. the Pan Am plane is one of, and I consider it probably the first of the horrible coincidences that eventually resulted in what happened. The Pan Am plane left New York late. It arrived in New York a little bit late and then left late. As a result, it was in back of the KLM plane when they both were circling over Grand Canary after the terrorist attack on Grand Canary at the airport. And so it was in back of KLM when they both had to get sent over to Tenerife, and they were stuck there. They couldn't leave before KLM left. Pan Am could not, because KLM was a 747 and it was blocking the entire taxiway, and Pan Am was a 747, so they were both too big and they couldn't get around them. Would you like to talk about the terrorist bomb, or?
Sure. Yes. We're trying to understand just what caused the diversion.
Yeah, that was just a ridiculous coincidence. Another one of the terrible coincidences that just that morning, Sunday morning, March 27th, there's a separatist group that believed, the members of which believed that the Canary Islands should be a separate nation away from Spain. Spain at the time and still controls the Canary Islands. So they set off a bomb at the airport just to get some publicity. And I'm not sure if they were meaning to kill anyone, but they did injure a few people. And a phone call was placed to the switchboard at the airport, and the person who was a representative of the separatist group said, "There are bombs, plural, at the airport." And the switchboard operator called the airport manager. He said, "I know, one just went off. If the person calling from the separatist group had only used the singular word bomb, they might not have diverted all the flights over to another airport."
Oh, wow.
Because it had already gone off. They would have swept up all the broken glass, but the airport managers were worried that there were more bombs that hadn't gone off yet. So to play it safe, the two 747s, the Pan Am plane, the KLM plane, and a bunch of other flights too, were sent over to Tenerife to wait until they could figure out what was going on at the airport. In fact, there was only one bomb. Not that that was so great, but it took every bit of 90 minutes, I think, before they finally figured that out, and then all the planes started coming back.
Wow. So were they aware, were the KLM and Pan Am flights aware of the terrorist situation happening at the other airport, or were they just left in the dark?
No, they were both told exactly what had happened. And I'm not sure, and maybe we'll never know. We won't ever know if the KLM pilot told the passengers that everyone on that plane was killed after the collision, but the Pan Am pilot decided to kind of fudge it a little bit. And he said, "There's a plane stuck on the runway," which wasn't really quite right. But the word got around anyway. And I did explain to the in my book just exactly how a rumor, in this case, not a rumor, can fly through an airplane cabin. Someone from the cockpit happened to mention it to the flight, one of the people with the cruise company, who was checking up on things. And that man came back to first class and immediately started telling everybody. So within minutes, that the fact that there had been a bomb was pretty much known throughout the entire cabin of the Pan Am. But no, they were told right away. But then they had to wait for a couple hours at Tenerife. Both planes and the other smaller planes had to wait. So until the Grand Canary Island people could fix things up and determine that there was, in fact, no other bomb. But unfortunately, the weather started getting worse as they were waiting. And that was another factor in what happened. The fog started rolling in, and it got worse and worse and worse, making it harder to see on the runway.
Yes. And what is the airport like in Los Rodeos, and how does the fog contribute to those conditions that day?
Yeah, the airport, which is not used very much anymore, Los Rodeos, it's near a really big mountain on Tenerife Island, and it catches wet wind from the ocean. And the wet winds turn into fog, and they roll right down the side of the mountain, and then they turn into fog on the runway. And it kept getting worse and worse as the hours went by until they were barely at the minimum acceptable visual capabilities at the airport. And that was one more horrible irony about this, earlier in the day, it wasn't that bad. And then even worse, a few minutes after the collision, which was now getting close as we're explaining it, the fog kind of blew away a little bit. But the result of the fog being as strong as it was at the time of the collision, neither plane could even see each other. And the control tower could not see either plane. It was that thick on the runway. So that the fog was a major factor here.
And can you walk us through the other series of systematic failures that went wrong that all contributed to the accident that day?
Yeah. Yeah, there were a number. I counted 11 altogether.
Wow.
I've already given you a couple. But there was confusion several times during the act of taxiing. The Los Rodeos Airport on Tenerife has only one runway. And because the taxiway next to the runway was full of smaller planes, a number of which had been diverted because of the bomb, the way for both of the big jets, the 747s, to get into position to take off was by taxiing right down the runway. And then when they got to the end, they were supposed to turn around and then take off once the runway was clear. Well, there was farther along on the taxiway, things did open up, but both pilots got confused about the instructions from the traffic controller in the cockpit, or in the control tower, about where they should turn. And he told them, leave the runway at the third exit. And third and first, if you say them quickly, they kind of sound similar. Third. And both of them thought he said first, which wouldn't have made any sense, because that would have taken them right back to where they'd been parked to begin with. He kept trying to say third. They kept misunderstanding him. And finally, he gave up with the KLM plane, which was first. And he said, just go to the end and turn around. So, okay. So they did that. And they turned around, and they were in position, ready to take off. Meanwhile, in back of them, here came Pan Am, doing exactly the same thing and getting just as confused about where they were supposed to turn off. But the last instruction he had said to Pan Am was leave at the third turnoff. Well, they actually got a little past the third because they got mixed up about the numbers. They were headed for the fourth turnoff, which actually kind of made sense. The fourth turnoff was an easy angle for a really big jet to get them onto the taxiway. And they were in between the third and fourth when the collision happened. But meanwhile, the KLM pilot decided to take off. And that's the number one thing that really threw everything out of whack. He did not have permission. The important word in aviation is the word clearance. When an airplane cockpit crew has been given permission to do something, that is the magic word. You are cleared for takeoff, for example. That means go, do it. And you're supposed to wait for that word, and the KLM pilot did not. He also did not hear, this is yet another one of the ironies, he simply didn't hear Pan Am saying, we're still on the runway.
And what was this, what was the reason for that?
Well, there was an electronic noise that deleted part of the Pan Am cockpit crew's transmission. They were both on the same frequency, both planes, so they could hear everything that was being said to the control tower in each plane. And the air traffic controller, he said, let me know when you're cleared the runway. They said, yes. And then at some point, he gave the flight instructions to KLM. That's not the same thing as takeoff instructions. A plane has to know, the cockpit crew has to know exactly what they're supposed to do after they take off, before they take off, so that they fly to a certain radar beacon, for example, and then they turn a certain number of degrees to go to the next point on the compass, like that. Then, once that's clear, then they're told, okay, you can take off. So KLM had its flight instructions, but they did not have takeoff clearance. At the moment that Pan Am was saying, after they heard the instructions being given, Pan Am said, and we're still on the runway. And just then there was this static noise on the frequency being used by both planes. It's called a heterodyne. It's just basically a crackly static. And by horrible coincidence, it happened exactly when Pan Am was saying, we're still on the runway. The later, listening to the cockpit transcripts, it was determined that it was still barely audible what Pan Am was saying, but the KLM pilot was very distracted that day because he was worried about going into overtime, which is not permitted. Dutch rules are very strict about that. So he was distracted. He wanted to get off the ground, and he couldn't see anything on the runway because of the fog. So he simply threw the throttles open and started to take off. And then the worst one of all for me, that was bad enough, and that was judged to be the main reason, or one of the main reasons for the crash. But the worst one is that the flight engineer sitting in back of the pilot, the KLM pilot, said, leaned over and said, are you sure Pan Am is off the ground? And the KLM pilot was still distracted. He's in the middle of trying to get his plane up to takeoff speed. He turns and says, what? Ouch. Using up a few more seconds, and the flight engineer repeated his question. Said, are you sure Pan Am is clear? And his answer was, oh, yes, which was completely wrong. And then just a few seconds later, then through the fog, there was another 747 directly in front of them. And they hadn't quite reached takeoff speed yet, which that was another irony. They had, KLM had refueled at Tenerife because they wanted to do something productive with the time there. There was nothing wrong with that decision, but it made the plane many tons heavier. And that meant it took more runway for them to take off. It's just one after another, 11 altogether are these horrible coincidences and mistakes, and any one of which might have stopped the whole thing. But then they collided, and everyone on KLM died. But there were 61 survivors on the Pan Am plane. There were actually more after the collision, but some people were not able to get up and out for several reasons. And I did spend a lot of time in my book talking about the behavior that people can go through in moments of crisis like that. And, you know, it's not really fight or flight. It's fight, flight, or freeze. And a lot of people were simply frozen in place. And as one of the survivors later said, he got up to get out and he looked around and he saw plenty of people still alive. He said it was like looking at a deer in the headlights. People just, they didn't know what to do. Their brains weren't ready for this. And the worst happened to those people.
For those who survived, how were they able to escape?
Yeah, there were a couple of different ways of getting out. The people in first class were lucky because they had not been hit, that part of the plane, in the same way that farther back in the plane was. And that's where Warren and Caroline Hopkins, the couple I was working with, that's where they'd been sitting. Warren Hopkins was probably the very first person to get out of the plane. And he was a World War II combat veteran and was not intimidated by something suddenly happening that he needed to respond quickly to. And he, within maybe 5 seconds, he said, "Let's go," got up and walked to where the door was, but it was no longer there because the metal had been ripped. He jumped down anyway. It was like a 20-foot jump, and hurt his ankle very badly. And his wife followed a couple people later. She couldn't get her seatbelt unfastened.
Wow.
So some people got out by responding very quickly. There were a couple of other World War II veterans on the plane who knew what it was like to be in moments of severe crisis, and they responded. And other people were not so fortunate. But some people climbed out through the roof. A couple of people I interviewed later did that. And some others, there was a hole in the middle of the fuselage in the middle of the economy section. And a lot of people got out that way, off the left side of the plane. The people who were able to respond quicker in this moment were able to save themselves. And it's, to me, it's an argument for taking a minute, no more than a minute or two at the beginning of every flight you get on. Just look at the card and look at the nearest couple of exits. The flight attendants are not kidding when they say that, because it creates a pathway in your brain that if you need it, it's there already, and it'll help. I mean, it's true. Aviation is very, very safe. It's true. But I think people who get nervous about flying will just feel better if they prepare themselves a little bit. I mean, there's statistics that say that even with all the good numbers about safety and flying, about a third of us, about a third of Americans have some nervousness about getting in an airplane. I think if they prepared themselves a little bit more, they'd feel better about it. And for that matter, I think you could extend that to other things too, like theater, restaurant. There's a famous example of 9/11. From 9/11, the Morgan Stanley brokerage, the man who was head of security for that company, after that first, and back in the early 90s, there had been a truck bomb in the bottom of the World Trade Center, and he would regularly hold drills and evacuations for the employees. They didn't, nobody liked it. They thought it was annoying. But what it did was when the actual planes struck on 9/11, almost every single one of the more than 1,000 Morgan Stanley employees got out.
Wow.
He, the security director, did not survive. He stayed behind to make sure that the last few people got out, and which is kind of an amazingly sad aspect of that. But he did, in fact, save more than 1,000 people.
Wow.
So it's not just aviation, although that's the most dramatic example. It's just to pay attention to where you are.
Know your exits.
Know your exits. Really, it takes seconds.
So, John, we ask all of our guest experts this question. At the end of the day, if you had to pick one person or thing, it could be a concept that is to blame for the Tenerife airport disaster. Who or what would that be?
One thing. Yeah, taking things for granted, I suppose, and not double checking your processes. Although that kind of goes back to what I was just suggesting about the importance of paying attention to your surroundings and taking things one step at a time. The KLM pilot, who was a good pilot, he let himself be distracted by extenuating circumstances. He was worried about the overtime. He probably should have said something about the fog to the control tower. When you don't take things for granted. Yeah. But,
yes, it's very good advice. thank you so much, John, for joining us today and helping us understand this terrible tragedy.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hello, Rebecca. Hello, Alarmy.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
How about that, you know, very insightful conversation with John? I felt like I was writing down a bunch of stuff as he was talking and giving us insight.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's just something about aviation and aviation disasters that is like endlessly fascinating to me. I think it's because, like how John was saying at the end, we do, even though they're proven to be relatively safe, we are all just fearful for some reason of flying. Mm-hmm. And so there's something about sort of just like exploring how these happen that is, I don't know, it's just so fascinating.
It is. I mean, could it possibly be the altitude?
It just doesn't, there's something just feels wrong about being that high.
Yeah. I also loved how, and we'll jump into this.
Yes.
Well, should I just jump in?
Jump right in.
Jump in.
Well, Amanda, you wrote this down, and he explained fog so well.
Mm.
And especially the sort of phenomenon of the fog that happened at this airport and at this altitude, which he called wet wind.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it was that the mountain catches wet wind from the ocean and it turns into fog, rolls down the mountain and rolls into the runway.
You can visualize that.
You know, in all of my research, I couldn't come up with that, but I... So he kind of made me look bad, which I'll give him a pass.
Yeah, don't be too hard on yourself, Chris. We understand. You've only got DuckDuckGo.
I try my best here, but ultimately, I get paid. I get paid very little.
Entire support team that you talk about.
I've had to make cuts on the team. I've had to let some people go. Some tough conversations.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You get paid per fact. You get paid a penny on the fact.
He's really struggling.
Yeah, that was my worst decision, was allowing that in the contract.
Now, I wrote down tardiness, because when he was discussing the diversion of the flights, he said that Pan Am had been tardy to New York and therefore had been tardy getting to the Grand Canary Islands. So, you know, and that was the reason why they were right behind the KLM. So when you think that to me, when I think about that stuff, that really messes with my head. It's just that, you know, you just don't know. It's like you're either running a few minutes late, you know, or you're running early that day. And somehow that just affects where you are in time and, you know, in the face of a disaster. It's
right.
So scary.
It is. And I think to John's sort of final point that he drove home, what it really affects is your ability or inability to just stay in the present moment, stay mindful and be conscious of what you're doing. And how he put it was to pay attention. And, you know, something that to me like really hit home, because, and especially his description of reading the safety protocols on the pamphlet at the air when you get on an airplane. And he's like, it takes a second, but what it does is he used the phrase, creates a pathway in your mind.
Okay, so, and then the other thing that I thought was interesting that he said, and he said this, it was one of the first things he mentioned, was coincidences.
Ooh.
And yeah. I liked that, because we didn't really touch on this. It was we did talk about the series of events, but we didn't talk about this sort of mystery factor of, like, there were just a bunch of random things that happened. And sometimes these disasters are coincidences.
A series of coincidences. And so is there something to thinking about? I mean, we don't often get into mysticism here on The Alarmist. We try and be pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
But is there something to think about? You know, I think we have talked about fate in some episodes. But, you know, at what point, how many coincidences, babes, basically, how many coincidences does it take to screw in a light bulb of fate?
Oh, apparently 11.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, like, at what point do you be like, well, this is now just crazy that all these crazy coincidences happen?
Yeah, if you think about it, 11 coincidences or 11 things going wrong that are like major, major things, mm-hmm. it's like very bad luck. This whole, you know, disaster feels like one of those Final Destination movies.
Mm. Yes.
You know what I mean? It's there's something about it where it feels like there's some kind of lack of control. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think there's a lot of things that went wrong that were actual human mistakes.
Well, that was true. That and then he did bring up the fact that we do know that the pilots were made aware of the bomb.
Right. We didn't know if that. If
right. And we were sort of talking about that. We weren't sure if they knew. But given that, now we can sort of add that to sort of how that was affecting the pilot's behavior. And, you know, his sort of inability to sort of focus on what he needed to do and the task at hand and, you know, on communication, you know, through the radio, but also with his co-pilots and everything.
I mean, the fact that he said also the this just popped up, you know, popped into my head. The fact that the terrorists said that there were plural bombs.
Right.
And really there was just one. And so, you know, had they taken the S out of the word bomb, then none of the planes would have probably been diverted.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, at the end of the day, though, we did land on similar verdicts with John. So John said who he wanted to blame was taking things for granted and not double checking processes and not paying attention to surroundings. But then he narrowed in on the KLM pilot who ultimately made the decisions that led to the crash. And so just to remind everyone, we did send the KLM pilot to jail and we slapped the terrorist bombing. So I don't know after this conversation with John, Rebecca, if you're considering changing the verdict.
I think that I think we landed on the right person or thing to send to jail for. I feel that way, but I do think that the slap should have. I mean, yes, the terrorists were part of it, but I feel like the slap should have been these 11 coincidences. Or
okay. Oh, you want to slap all 11 coincidences?
Yes, I do.
I like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because at a certain point, it's like none of had one stopped the other. Like if what he said, like the pilot had said, you know what, the fog's just a little too bad. Let's wait 5 minutes. Then none of this would have happened because as John you know explained. Just a few minutes later, the fog started to lift.
Crazy.
It's so crazy. So I just feel like these 11 things that went wrong should get slapped. But ultimately, I do feel like the pilot should have gone to the alarmist jail. What do you all think?
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. I like that. And so did you just quickly tally up the coincidences or is 11 a number you've had in your head all along?
Oh, John said it. He said he counted 11. Okay.
Now, I want everyone listening out there to take a quick moment and see if you can tally up what those 11 are in your head.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't ask me about all 11. I'm trusting John knows.
hop on Amazon, buy John's book, and that way you'll probably find out if you're right about the 11.
That's the only way to find out. So I'm just going to call it 11 failures. You're getting the big slap. So that was great. I love talking to John. This is one of those disasters that really lingers in your head because it, you know, it feels very close to home in that this could happen to anyone at any time. You know, we're in a modern society. We're on planes all the time. You know, what John was saying, like, know your exits. I will never take that for granted, you know?
Yep.
You know, those are all in a way it's like there's a lot of tangible things we can do if we do happen to survive a terrible disaster like this. Like he said, you know, don't freeze, give yourself a minute and then move. But a lot of it feels like luck. So, you know.
And also not to bring it back, but he said that line, create a pathway in your mind. And that's what the actor does before every scene. He thinks about the scene, what he's going to do. So I think a little bit of rehearsal and a little bit of acting workshop and work can go a long way.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
The rehearsal process is actually, he was discussing the rehearsal process for in that story about the 9/11 head of security. Yes.
Exactly.
That's a rehearsal, guys. That's a rehearsal.
So we have a few little announcements before we wrap up today. And one is we got a great review, and I just want, I need to read this to you all because it is.
This is exciting.
Yeah, it's a really, really good review. Let me just pull it up here on Apple Podcasts. And, you know, you too can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll probably read it on one of these Aftermath episodes.
These reviews are great. Yeah.
Yeah, they're so fun. Okay, let's see. Yes. Okay, so this comes in from Art Like Bread, 5 stars, titled We Needed This. History is full of tragedies, but does it have to be? What if the people, places, concepts, institutions that are to blame for these events were locked away? We'd surely end up with two things, a crowded prison and a safer future. Plus, with consequences like these, big offenders like the fashion industry just may shape up and stop instigating. This is a fun and educational podcast. Laugh and learn about both obscure, the eggnog riots, and topical, the ship stuck in the Suez Canal events. Most importantly, find out who is to blame. The host Rebecca rules wisely and isn't too proud to change a verdict if new evidence comes to light. This is a must listen.
I mean,
wow.
That sounds like something we should basically take and put it on the cover of our website or something.
I know. That's what I was thinking. I was like, that is so, describes the show so well. I don't think we've ever been able to nail it like that. So thank you for that review.
Thank you, Art Like Bread. That was incredible.
Yes. And then secondly, I just want to shout out Acast supporter again. I know we did it last episode, but this is, you hear Rebecca talk about it getting to the 1 millionth episode at the top of every one of our shows. You can just follow the link in our show notes to give us a one-time donation to Acast supporter. And that money goes back in to support the show. We bought Clayton, like I think I mentioned last week, we got him a new mic stand. So he didn't have to crane his neck when he appears on the show. And we just recently had some equipment failures.
That's right.
And so we had to invest in some new equipment. So that's what we use that money for. So if you want to send us $5, want to send us $500, we will gladly accept.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's, you just never know when Mercury is going to be in retrograde or when the full moon is going to affect all of your equipment and have it all break at once. You just don't know. And you have to be prepared.
Yep.
So that really helps us, you know, be able to continue to make our episodes and get to our 1 millionth goal eventually.
Yes. And then lastly, I have a little bit of an announcement. That I want to share with the Alarmy, which is that I'm going on a maternity leave.
What?
Oh my God.
I know. I'm just telling Chris and Rebecca this too, because I wanted to get their reactions live on the air.
Yeah. The thing about how we record the Alarmist is that we do it all via Zoom. So I never see above Amanda's neck, above her shoulders. I mean, I'm sorry. I only see above her shoulders. I never see below the shoulder.
That's right. I know. I've been hiding this pregnancy from everyone.
Well, congratulations, Amanda. We're so happy for you. Best of luck on your maternity leave.
And yes, we're so excited for you. And just for the record,
I gotta get one of those Alarmy onesies.
Yes.
Do you know who the father is, or?
No, I'm still figuring it out. It is one of our guest experts, though.
Okay, that's a good clue.
So yeah, I'll let you guys sort of narrow in.
Yeah, that really does narrow it down. yay, and we're going to miss you so much, but we will also be in the faithful hands of Alarmy General Clayton Early, who will be helping us for the time being.
That's right. So he's going to be filling in for me. I will be still overseeing, you know, keeping the baby comes, let's see, end of September. So, you know, I'm still going to be floating around omnipresent in all of these recordings. But yeah, Clayton's taking over, and yeah, you guys are in good hands. Yeah. So I will miss everyone, though, because I love doing this so much.
We'll be on our best behavior, and we'll make sure that it's a clean house
When you get back. Yeah. We'll do our best in your leave, Amanda, and we will definitely miss you. And you know what? The only thing we'll just make sure Clayton lets us do our thing like you do.
Yeah. I hope he does. I pray he does. And I also pray you respect his little time checks.
We will, in your
we
honor.
We will. We promise. That is our promise to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Alarmy. Amanda, we're going to miss you. We love you. And, you know, tune in next week because we are going to be discussing the 1958 Bradford Sweets poisoning. It's going to be interesting.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.